Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jaden Thomas back on the show. Jaden's from Fargo, North Dakota. He works at the Fargo Shield Store, and he's also just a relentless angler, walleye tournament angler, specifically in the summertime and in the wintertime, again, just fishing all the time. So he's a good friend of the crew. I like having him on. Usually gives great fishing updates, and he's almost always fishing, so there's always some recent fishing to talk about. And in this particular interview, we've done this before with Jaden, but we're getting a retail update on just some of the trends, some of the things that are happening, maybe some new gear. We just touch on some retail topics as far as the fishing industry goes and Jaden's experience there as a Shields employee, and then we're going to talk fishing. Jaden's been doing a bunch of it for the last month or so, or probably over a month now that he's been on the ice around the Midwest doing a lot of different things, and we hear about a lot of different things, and we poke and prod at a recent trip up to Lake Winnipeg catching big greenbacks. So yeah, a lot is covered in this episode in a short amount of time. Let's get to it. We've got Jaden Thomas. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zuloff Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zuloff Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zuloff Construction at their website, zuloffconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. For anybody that likes to enjoy the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, I would recommend the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast, put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. This podcast playlist features a variety of entertaining topics, but for anglers specifically, you're going to find episodes that feature biologists and other fisheries department employees that are going to highlight and detail the great fishing opportunities across the state. They also tackle all the hot seasonal topics and feature data and research. So if you're looking for another great source of information about the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, check out the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast, put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. A link to check it out is in the description. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. We're going to talk fishing later in this episode, but what is kind of the vibe or the update on the retail world, man? That, you know, we've been in this now for a couple of months. There's been a few sale events happening there at Shields, but just industry wise, what are some of the updates? What are some of the big sellers? What are some of the big happenings? What are, you know, from a buying perspective, what are some of the fun things for people to hear or realize have been going on?
Well, I think, Taylor, if you look at the retail side thing, I think it ties in with what we've been seeing from any angle you look at fishing, or any angle of the fishing industry this year, is that life is good. People are excited. We've had a great freeze so far. I've had one of the best starts to a nice fishing season I think we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years. Just in that, you know, we had a gradual cool down, so the water got nice and cold. When that happens, when it freezes hard and fast. I know I started my ice season, would have been the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. I was up on the Devil's Lake area with Jason. We were chasing walleyes, had good luck. So, I mean, we've had a great start to our season. You know, we're well 4 or 5 weeks into our season now, pretty much all across the ice belt. And with that, with having, you know, the struggles of the last few years where either there wasn't enough ice or there's too much snow, or just some winters, you just get such a long winter that you kind of get to that February period where people are just sick of ice fishing, you know, even though you might still have ice fishing well into the end of April. But we've kind of had a perfect storm of this year where it said, yeah, take the carryover or the lack there, the lack of ice from last season, the lack of excitement or urgency last year. Now coming into this year where we're having such great conditions that everyone's excited for ice fishing. Everyone I've talked to in the store has had just a great upbeat attitude. They're so excited to get out. And fishing has been good, which is paired with that as well. I mean, a lot of people going out have been super excited. They've had to get on bites, and they've been finding these bites. I mean, all across, you know, being working at the Shield of Fargo, kind of a nice central hub for all four directions. You know, people fishing South Dakota, fishing out west in the sloughs out near Jamestown Valley City, guys hitting the east side over in like the Detroit Lakes area down in Oxdale County, and then people going up north to like Devil's Lake, Lake of the Woods, and Winnipeg. Fishing's been good everywhere you go. And so, kind of to tie into your original question, how's business been? It's been great. I mean, some of the trends I'm seeing, it's kind of been all over the place, but I'll say a couple of the biggest trends I'm seeing in fishing so far this season has been one, batteries with all the new electronics, you know. I mean, we can beat a dead horse here. Forward facing sonar is the biggest, coolest thing to hit fishing in quite some time. It's not going anywhere. I think kind of the residual effect to that, I don't think anyone really saw coming, was the advancements in batteries, specifically lithium battery technology. And then another thing I'm seeing too, to kind of tie inside with that, is electric augers. You know, they've been out for quite some time, but I mean, we're at the point now, at least in the Shield I work at in Fargo, we don't carry a non-electric option. Whether you're talking the drill bits for like Duvall from Milwaukee Drills, or you're talking power augers, they're all electric now. And when I started my career at Shields 11 years ago, there was a 16-foot wall of augers, and there was probably well over a dozen models. You're talking from Jiffy, Eskimo, Strikemaster. Ion was the electric option at the time. You know, it was the green auger. I mean, there was gas, there was propane, there was the bit, there was the bit, the K-drill bit that went on your drill, and then there was the electric green one. So to see where we've gone from that 10 years ago to now, augers is an 8-foot wall with about 8 to 10 options, all electric, has been pretty wild to see.
I'm kind of curious too about all the little things. You know, we've had some really fun conversations in the past. One thing that I, you know, reflected on was, you know, we're talking about tackle. You know, like every year the companies are going to come out with fresh colors, for example, or maybe there's a new design in a glide bait, or there's a new this, you know, like all these trends. It's amazing how this day and age, something can get so popular and big and qualify as a trend, as like a legitimate thing, but it's so crazy how quickly some of these things can come and go. You know, like with lures presentations, you know, watching digital content, and just seeing how popular things get, and it come and then they go, and then other things stick around for a while. You know, if we're talking rods, line, lures, what are some of the interesting, fun trends going on there? I mean, even from a retail perspective, but even sometimes just your personal opinion. I'm just sort of curious along those lines.
Yeah, so obviously, if we get into tackle, I mean, you're right in my wheelhouse. I'm a fish junkie, you know, I'm a nerd when it comes to this stuff. So anytime I can get my hands on new gear, I'm all about it. And like you said, too, even necessarily not brand new, might be new to us, or, you know, the old phrase, what's old is new again. I guess we're talking specifically what I've been seeing. A couple of things I've been seeing as far as tackle side. One that I think is really cool has been this new company. Again, they're new to us here at Shield, and more specifically the States, but a company called Element Custom Lures. They're out of Winnipeg, Manitoba. And their lures obviously are designed more for Winnipeg, but they work, what I found is they work anywhere they go. Specifically, they have this one spoon called the Wingding. It's a big flutter spoon. But it has multiple little flicker blades hanging off the sides. And so it just makes it a little bit different than other flutter spoons you see on the market. I guess if someone have never seen a Wingding before, if you want to compare it to a couple others, the only other ones I think are similar would be like the Dinner Bell from Frostbite Lures, and then the Thumper Spoon from Northland Tackle, which is new this year. And all of those spoons are going to be the same design, and that they're flutter spoons. So when on the drop, they're going to flick fall to their side, flicker and flutter all the way down, a very slow, gradual fall, and slide away from your hole. So they're going to cover water, draw fish in from a distance. But I think the what makes the all of these baits unique, specifically the Wingding too, it has multiple little flicker blades hanging off the sides of it. Now, you look at that, and you might automatically think, oh, more flutter, more flash. You're exactly right. But the underrated portion of that is when you jig it, those little blades click and clang off the body. So you're getting a flutter spoon and a rattle spoon almost in one. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds. And I think something that makes a difference, not always, but sometimes, is when those fish are a little more finicky, you know, they eye the bait a bit more than they just come in and vapor trail you and just smack the rod out of your hand. When they're eyeing that bait up more, anything that can seal the deal or convince them it's alive or the real thing only plays in your favor. And when you slow that presentation down, when those fish are coming up and just eyeing it, when you're just barely moving that rod, getting that usually that treble hook with some bait on it to move or just get a little more action on that bait, those flicker blades just look like little flash, little flutter of some of a real a live bait fish. Or they're just going to tick and tack off that body just ever so slightly, just that little bit extra noise to seal the deal. So Element Custom Lures Wingding, that was a good one. I heard a lot of buzz around last year up at Lake Winnipeg. So we brought them in this year to Shields, and they've been going crazy. And that's because it produces. And not just at Lake Winnipeg. What I found is that they carry three sizes, a 25, a 50, and a 70. If you look at all three sizes, the one that stands out the most would probably be the 50 size. I'd want to say it's like an eighth or a 3/16 ounce bait. So that's probably the most common one guys reach for when they think of walleye fishing. But that 70 size is a great oversized bait if you're thinking Lake Winnipeg or just big walleyes in general. But the sleeper is that size 25 size, like a 16 ounce spoon. That has been an absolute murderer for crappies around our area. And I don't think that's something they originally thought of when they designed this bait, how well it would do in the crappie markets here in the States, but it has been phenomenal. I'm talking whether you're fishing crappies in the reservoirs out west in North Dakota here, like we got, or if you're headed out east to the natural lakes in Minnesota, crappies have been devouring that spoon anywhere you bring it. And again, a little bit of a unique bait. If you grab it, it's going to be unlike a lot of things you've seen before, you know, kind of that same but different in that it's a flutter spoon body, but it's got these other little flicker blade appendages that's pretty unique to it. I don't care where you're going. You should grab a few of those, put them down in the water. It's going to make you a believer. I really believe that. It's a good lure.
When you look at the day and age now, what seems to be sort of the preferences to the anglers that shop in your stores as far as, is noise the big thing right now? Or is all the different types of profiles and shapes, is that the real craze of topic? Is finesse fishing the thing? I'm just sort of curious from a buyer, the trends in buyers' preferences from a lure standpoint that way.
Yeah, I guess if you're asking me specifically, I see a little bit of everything, which might seem like kind of the cop-out answer. But just that, you know, where I'm based at in Fargo, we have the benefit of having such a variety of fisheries. You know, like I usually equate it, you know, you have east and west. You go east of Fargo, you pretty much get in the Minnesota side of things where you have a lot of clear natural bodies of water. You get out west, you start running into more slough country or reservoirs, a lot of dirtier glacial lake regions. So you see a wide variety of not only species, but then the techniques and presentation to catch them, right? So I kind of get to see the best of both worlds when it comes to that. So I get a wide variety of customers doing a lot of different things. I would say, if I have someone come in and they ask me to help them find stuff, and maybe they're newer to fishing or getting stuff for loved ones or friends, I'm big on having a variety of profiles and presentations, not just maybe down to just, oh, I need different sounds or different colors. I like having a variety. So I guess when I'm looking at tackle, I try to break it down like different categories. You know, I think we talked before about where everything in ice fishing is essentially a jig, right? You're working a vertical presentation. It's not like open water where you're casting, and then obviously with casting, you go down a huge other rabbit hole, fall rates, you know, profiles, how does it fall, what's the action on it. You kind of can sweep a lot of that away with ice fishing in that everything is essentially a vertical presentation. It's a jig, right? So when it comes to that, I want to dial in, okay, what areas can I cover, or what different presentation can I cover, knowing that all my lures have to work in this specific zone below me. So let's dial in to more, let's say a little more walleye fishing than anything. I'm going to want active presentations, which would be like a horizontal glide bait, was a la like a jigging wrap or a tikka minnow, something in that flavor. I'd want something that's a horizontal rattle bait, so like the new Psycho Shad from Clam or the Rippin' Shads from Northland or the Rippin' Wrap, which I think is a standard in most people's tackle box these days. Then moving over the spoons, I'd want some kind of rattle spoon, whether, again, that be like a Clam PT rattling spoon, a Northland Buckshot rattle spoon. And then I'd want some kind of like a flutter spoon, whether it be the old reliable custom jigs and spin slender spoon, that new, LMA Custom Lures, the Wingding, or the thumper spoon from Northland, right? I think we can get too much in the weeds sometimes where guys might have all three of those flutter spoons, like I just said, and ask me which one's the best. I'll tell them, honestly, all three of them work. All three of them have caught fish for me. And it's just maybe what are you more confident in? And depending, then might dial in more like where exactly are you fishing. If I'm fishing a bit more turbid water, I want something with a little more flash and sound to it. So I'd reach more for the Wingding because I get the best of both worlds with that, right? If I'm fishing clearer water where just visuals everything, I maybe don't want as much sound because, you know, sound might spook fish in clearer water more often than not. I might reach for then just the standard custom jigs and slender spoon because that spoon is a pure flutter spoon. It makes no sound. It's just all flutter and sight, right? So I guess I don't know if I really answered your question. I kind of went in a roundabout way there, but I guess when I have a customer coming in asking, you know, what matters most to me, I always go back to if you're starting from scratch or you don't know exactly where you're going, what you're fishing for, I like variety. I like having one of everything instead of having a ton of just one category, if that makes sense.
I love that. You know, I think number one, it's just great for people to hear. It helps kind of formulate a buying decision, you know, and that's important. It's just good advice. And also, too, you kind of lay out the spectrum that, and that's what I think that, you know, a lot of people maybe get a little bit narrowly focused in their own, you know, if you look in people's tackle box, sometimes it's really telling, you know, of just how, just, you know, how much they understand the whole spectrum of things, you know, you know, like Mitchell always says, you know, like the bait that they're going to go on that day is whatever you only have one of. If you had, like you said, as soon as you said, you know, I'd rather have, like, if I had to choose, I'd rather have one of a lot of things, you know, or one of everything, so to speak, versus, you know, a bunch of only a few things, you know, in terms of the variety that the fish, you know, think about what the fish think you're giving them. Some of us might look in our tackle box and think we've got a whole bunch going on there. But when a lot of those baits do the same thing, you know, and they all hang down the same, you know, it's the same profile and the same kind of noise making ability, and they're the same size, but they're different colors. We're probably not nearly as much of a variety than we think. And so when you talk about sort of the spectrum, somebody ought to be looking at, I think that's important. And then, good advice. If you could just have one of everything, anything that you have one of really ups the chances that it's going to really pay off for you at some point. And so that's probably a good,
well, it's like, I'll get customers sometimes like, where I'm like, what are they biting them? Oh, I'm getting them. I tell them, oh, I was just in Devil's Lake. I was getting good on jigging wraps. You got any of those? Like, well, I got some rattling flyers. I got some Northland buckshots. I got some clam rattling spoons. I'm like, okay, so the short answer is no, you don't. You have a ton of spoons, but they're all, you basically have three versions of a rattling spoon. You have 20 spoons that are all the same thing, just different colors and sizes and brands, but they essentially are all rattling spoons. So no, you don't have a lure that's anything close to what I just said they're biting on.
Yeah. It's like when you change brands or companies, you know, I think that in a lot of people, in myself included, like this is just me kind of going back in time for myself, that like, I think there's a certain level of perspective there where if I'm changing colors and I'm changing companies, if sometimes we fail to realize that an 1/8 ounce rattling spoon is an 1/8 ounce rattling spoon.
Exactly.
Well, anyways, let's get into some of the fishing you've been doing. I haven't talked to you specifically about this at all, so I'm curious about all these updates. And, you know, you mentioned early ice in and around that Thanksgiving time. So you've been on the water for a little while. You were fishing walleyes with Mitchell. I'm curious about all of it, man. What's the sort of the fishing reports on your end, man? What's it been like for you so far this season?
I've been all over the place.
Nice.
I have been all over the place and all over the board. You know, usually I go into seasons, more simply ice season, because, I mean, you know me pretty well at this point. I'm really a walleye guy, open water season. Pretty much nothing diverts my attention from walleyes when the water's soft. When the water's hard, I like to kind of change up who I am. You know, I always say I pretend to be a panfish guy normally when the lakes freeze over, just because it gives me a nice break from walleye. Last year, I kind of went the opposite. I hardly did any panfish and just kind of committed to just chasing big walleyes all ice season and had a great year. This year going into it, you know, I kind of was like, I think I need a break from walleye again, commits more panfish. Well, I always say that then early ice, I usually spend those first couple weeks chasing walleyes because the bite's always so good. You know, I've said it many a time in many conversations that early ice is no different than your late fall pattern. It's just that they have ice over their heads now. They're usually in the same places feeding pretty heavily. So wherever you're catching them, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks before in a boat or on shore, guarantee you when you got 4 or 5, 6 inches of ice, they're still there doing the same thing. So you might as well cash in on what you know. So that's kind of what I did. I just mainly chased a lot of walleyes around the Devil's Lake area, you know, those first couple weeks of the seasons. Then I was like, I do really want to get back into panfish, especially bluegills. Big bluegills have a special place in my heart. So I kind of told myself my goal for this year was to get another gill over 11 inches, which I hadn't tangled with in a little while. I did that. So I spent a couple weeks around Ottawa County, checking in on a few lakes I know pretty well, and then exploring some new lakes with mixed results. A lot of the places I went, I found the big gills I was looking for. But I either couldn't get on them because they were very spooky with some of the clear ice and just not favorable conditions I was facing with, or I lost them. I was hooked up with a very, very big gill, one of the biggest gills I ever hooked up with, and I can say that because I did unfortunately see it right at the edge of the hole before my hook came back flying in my face, so had to deal with that heartbreak for a little bit. So the big gills have been eluding me this year. Kudos to them. You know, they don't get big by always getting caught. I've had to remember, I had to tell myself and remind myself that a few times to start this year. The crappies have been playing along really well. I went to New Lake searching gills and found the big gills, but also found more 10 to 13 inch crappies than I knew what to do with. They were a lot more bitey than the gills were, so that was a good way to spend a couple days. Well, then I actually just got back from Lake Winnipeg last night. I got invited on a spur of the moment trip, and if I can make it happen, I'll always try to make it happen. And I was fortunate enough to make it happen. So me and some buddies went north of the border for a few days to check it out, get on the early ice bite that Lake Winnipeg has kind of been keeping secret for the last few years. And this is the earliest I've ever been up there. I said, when we're recording this now, this is December 30th, and I was up there the 28th and 29th. Was found anywhere from 15 to 20 inches of ice, and I drove around in my truck. We had good ice, but I will say, check in, don't just follow Facebook reports up there. You know, they're a great tool, but that shouldn't be your Bible when you're going off ice conditions. That's not just for Lake Winnipeg. That's anywhere you go. Either I know Jason is famous for saying, make your own ice report, or talk to people who have boots on the ground there. You know, and I'm not talking read the report that this resort puts out there. I know, send messages, call people you know, or don't be afraid to reach out to people that they maybe you don't know personally, but you know they've been on the ice, just to get a report from safety. Because I'll tell you, we went out and we found anywhere from 15 to 20 inches, drove my truck around Lake Winnipeg, no issue for us. But there was a few breakthroughs for vehicles this last time out on Lake Winnipeg in some of the same areas I was at. So it's like, it's not just a big water thing or a destination thing. It's anywhere you go. Always be mindful. Again, the old saying is no ice is truly safe ice. And we're still in that time frame where that's really true. You have a lot of fluctuation with ice moving. We've had a nice winter, but we've also had some warmer than average days this early ice, and that can change things really fast. Not in that you're not going to say go from having 16 inches of ice to like 14 or 13, but ice moves. You know, when you have really cold days, ice contracts, it builds ice, it causes a shift. Well, same thing when you have really warm days, it'll expand, sheets will bust apart, move. So just, again, to reiterate the safety part of it, make your own ice report and talk talk, get confirmation with people with boots on the ground, or in this case, tires on the ice. You know, make sure you actually know what's going on before you, take that chance yourself with either your own life or the lives of others when getting around on not just big water destinations, but anytime you step on the ice. That's kind of my little safety tip for everyone to listen out there. But Winnipeg was good. Fishing was great. My group didn't tangle with any masters ourselves. My buddy did lose one, I'm pretty sure was in that 30 inch category, just because we did land quite a few of those 27, 28 inch class fish. And that fish put these other ones to shame with just the weight of it and just the bend in the rod it produced. But if you're thinking about going to Lake Winnipeg, don't think about it. Just do it. The amount of 24 to 27 inch fish in that system right now is absolutely incredible. I mean, we went up there with four guys and we broke out into two groups, two guys to a truck. And I'd say we averaged about 30 fish a day between each truck. And I'd say our average size is about 23, 24 inches. So I know everyone, when they hear Lake Winnipeg, thinks and wants, you know, the master anglers, the 28, the 32s, the 10 plus pounders, and that absolutely should be your goal. But keep in mind, you're going to have plenty of downtime in between those once in a lifetime bites you're looking for. Nothing wrong with filling up that downtime with as many 24 to 27 inch fish as you want. I mean, I think sometimes we get spoiled going up there with the amount of just quality big fish you catch in search of those true giants, you know. So I guess that's kind of the report I got for you. I've been everywhere and anywhere chasing about anything with mixed results. You know, I think that's about the as honest a report as I can give.
Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. For anybody that likes to enjoy the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, I would recommend the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast, put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. This podcast playlist features a variety of entertaining topics, but for anglers specifically, you're going to find episodes that feature biologists and other fisheries department employees that are going to highlight and detail the great fishing opportunities across the state. They also tackle all the hot seasonal topics and feature data and research. So if you're looking for another great source of information about the outdoor opportunities here in the state of North Dakota, check out the North Dakota Outdoors Podcast, put together by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. A link to check it out is in the description. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. I'm curious about the Winnipeg trip a little bit, just in, you know, like you say, that's kind of an early time frame. We talk about, we prepare for the Winnipeg season. Well, a lot of time for many people, you know, that have been going up there for a long time, they kind of wait to go to Winnipeg, you know, kind of till last, that late ice deal. You know, going up there midwinter when all the reports and there's a lot of participation usually kind of helps with that flow of information. So I'm kind of curious how it was for you guys going up there a little bit earlier. There's probably a lot less participation going on up there. So there was less, you know, fishing information. You had to go up there and find your own bites. And I'm kind of just sort of curious of other than just the thickness of the ice, was there any sort of different flavor to fishing the Big Windy, you know, this early?
Yeah, I guess it was a little different that, and I'm not going to label myself as a Lake Winnipeg expert. You know, I've been going up there pretty consistently now for the last couple of years. So I can tell you based off just what I've seen is that this year we went up this early. I've never had experience going up this early. The earliest I'd been before this was first week of February. So I'm up there significantly earlier than I'd ever been before. And I think you touched on it. Everyone's very familiar with Lake Winnipeg, you know, the March Madness deal. You know, when I think few of the reasons that's the most popular up there is obviously one late ice, you know, March, you have that that major push of big fish in that pre-spawn mode coming to the south basin, the feed and stage before they spawn, come ice out, you know, in that southern basin where the Red River dumps in Lake Winnipeg, right? So everyone goes up there late ice for the big fish. Another reason late ice is popular, just when you get that far north, conditions can get brutal. Well, typically you get in that March time frame, you have low to mid 30s days, lighter winds, so just fishing more comfortable in general, right? You have a lot of people go up there midwinter, you know, that late January through February time frame, just a part of that too is ice conditions are usually pretty stable at that point. Usually looking at 2+ feet of ice at that time frame. Travel's good, whether, you know, if you have a light snow, you can get around in trucks or wheeled traffic. Some years where you have high accumulation of snow, you have track vehicles only, but still that time frame you can count on having enough ice that you feel, you know, safe, air quotes, wherever you go. You talk this early ice time frame, I think it spooks a lot of people, or spooked me in the past just because Lake Winnipeg, you know, it is massive water. And then you also put into the fact you have a major river flowing into that draws the fish. Well, now you have big water, big wind, big waves, and current, all things that kind of work against you when you talk about making safe, navigable ice. I think that's kept a lot of people away in the past, and that kept me myself away in the past as well. Well, going up the last few years, I've heard just the whispers and rumors from good buddies who have done it before me, and also some friends who live up there that say the Lake Winnipeg early ice bite is kind of one of the best kept secrets, again, air quotes. If you know, you know. And the people that I know that did find out about that, they say you get up there early ice, it's phenomenal fishing in that the fish are still in big schools, big congregations like they were in the fall. And they're still feeding voraciously. So you still have kind of that late fall pattern going on with, you know, 15 to 20 inches of ice over the tops of their heads. And kind of hearing that when we went up there, it played pretty true in that a lot of the fish when we did find them were in big schools. They were big schools. There's a lot of fish in small areas. Now the flip side of that, there was a lot of dead water. So we stayed really mobile and moved around a lot. And I think one of the keys utilizing forward facing sonar when we were up there, it's very easy to sit down and start fishing. Because of what I've figured out with Lake Winnipeg as it sits right now, you can pretty much go anywhere on that lake and catch a 24-inch walleye. A lot of places you go, if you have forward-facing sonar, you drill a hole, and let's say you're looking out 80 to 100 feet. If you spin that thing in a circle, you're pretty much going to see 5 to 8 fish, again, almost anywhere you go. The real key, if you want to have good success up there or be consistently around biting fish, you need to find that big school. So if you're utilizing forward-facing sonar, again, like I said, if you put that thing down, you spin in the circle, you're seeing less than 10 fish. That's not really worth your time. You want to be seeing a dozen, 20, 30 fish in a circle when you spin that thing in a circle. That means you've found the center of the school, or you got just ahead of that school and they're moving towards you. That's the group of fish that's going to be the most aggressive, willing to bite, and that's what's going to allow you to stay in an area for a while and let that amount of fish cycle through you and give you, I guess, the most bites at the apple possible, not only catch as many fish as you'd like, but also those bigger fish that you're looking for and go up to Lake Winnipeg. So I think what I learned from this early ice trip is that it's very key to find those big schools of fish. And it's also more key, don't get discouraged if you're not seeing it. Lake Winnipeg is massive water, massive. So you might drill a hole, move 100 yards, drill another hole. You might do that 5, 6, 10 times and think, gosh, I feel like I'm covering so much water. I'm not seeing fish. You might get discouraged and think, I got to just set up and just help fish from underneath me. If you've done that, said half a dozen, 10 times, feel like you've covered a lot of water, zoom out on your map. I promise you, you've covered nothing. You gotta keep moving. And I can't stress enough, when you find those schools, the schools typically are massive. I tell people, you're not going to doubt if you found them. If you find them, you're going to see so many fish you didn't even think was possible having that many fish in one area. That's it. That's bingo. That's where I say, if I drill one hole, a good example is the second morning went out, first hole I drilled, I put my active target down, spun a circle. I probably counted 20 or 22 fish. My buddy was kind of moving a little slow, like, oh, well, what do you think? I said, drill another hole and get down right now. We don't need to go anywhere else. And we didn't move for the first hour and a half and had 12 fish in that time, all from like 19 to 26 inches. So again, I need to circle back to my original point is, if you're going to go up early ice, keep in mind these fish are hungry. They're aggressive. They're looking to eat. They're schooled up really tight in big schools, but they're not everywhere. It's massive water with massive fish and massive schools, but that still means there's going to be a lot of dead water. So stay mobile, stay active. Don't get discouraged. Keep moving until you find that needle in a haystack. And when you do, you're going to have a good time.
For you, I mean, you're utilizing forward sonar. Not everybody is. So my question would be for you, what's kind of the spectrum of what you would consider like an acceptable bite rate, you know, like for when you're staying in a spot? I mean, if you didn't have forward sonar and you were just going into spots in, you know, 2 to 4 person groups where you just sort of, you sort of pick an area on the map and everybody spreads out just so much and everybody drills like 1 or 4 holes and, you know, how long you're going to give a spot. What do you feel like in this time of year would have been an acceptable catch rate for you to, you know, stay in a spot for how long? I guess I'm just sort of curious about that.
Yeah. So I think a good point to make too is like, I fished Lake Winnipeg before we had forward facing sonar. So I kind of get both sides of it. So I say what I did before I had forward facing sonar, when I would go to Lake Winnipeg, you know, you'd find your likely areas. I think there's fish here. It was good to fish a hole for about 15 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. If you fish and you didn't mark anything, then you move, you know, a couple hundred yards. And you do that probably 2 or 3 times, you know, drill a hole, fish. Do that 2 or 3 times, fish 15, 20 minutes. Okay, you fished a couple hundred yard area for about an hour. If you haven't marked anything, then that's where you make like mile, half a mile, 2 miles, you know, a giant move then. Where I'd say if you still have a forward facing sonar, that's still probably the best way to go about it. Now, in those 15 minutes, if I catch a fish, well, then I restart the timer. I keep going until I go 15 minutes without catching a fish. If I'm marking them but they won't bite, then I'll still give another 15 minutes to see if they will turn on. But if I go those another 15 minutes, say I go a half hour now where I'm marking fish but not catching them, then I'll still make – there's fish here, but they're not going. The school's inactive. I'll still make small moves. You know, maybe a different part of the school is more active, more different fish in that school are willing to bite, or maybe there's another school close by that's more active. So again, I think the best way to break down if you don't have forward facing sonar, how I used to attack, how I would attack it is drill your holes, fish your areas. If you're not marking or seeing anything within 15, 20 minutes, move. If you've done that 2 or 3 times, make a big move. But if you are seeing fish, but not quite by still, make small moves because that means you're close. I mean, it's almost a win in itself getting around fish on a body of water that massive, just finding life. That's kind of, you know, that's their first big piece of the puzzle. And then from there, you know, make small moves to get more success. You know, the old saying, make big moves to find fish, small moves to catch fish is still very true, especially said if you're going in there without forward face sonar, it's not impossible. It kind of breaks my heart where I work in a store and have people talk about, oh, I can't afford it, I can't do this. You can still have great success because, look, we as fishermen, we did it for ages and years without forward facing sonar. That's really only become prevalent, what, the last 5 or 6 years?
Right.
It's easy to fall in that trap of everyone's talking about it, everyone's saying they're using it, and you see what they're catching. Guys, we're still having impressive catches well before it. So it's still possible. It just goes back, you're going to have to work. You're going to have to put in the work and, you know, kind of, you know, cement that confidence in yourself that I may not be seeing fish at this spot or the last 6 or 10 spots, but the next hole I drill could hit, be paid, or, you know, it could be the mother load. So I think, again, to kind of answer your question, if you're going up there without forward facing sonar, be willing to work, but understand you may have to put in a bit more patience with each hole, you know, really let you'll fish a bit more to make fish reveal themselves, you know, cause you're not just gonna be able to point the magic wand down and have them show themselves to you. You gotta have to try and draw fish in or see what's really still swimming underneath you just by fishing.
So you, leaning on your expertise as an angler, destination angler, working in retail, what are some recommendations? Maybe a list of gear pieces that nobody's thinking of. You know, if people aren't nuanced on destination fishing trips, or maybe they're going to Winnipeg, for example, for the first time ever. What are some of those things in their blind spot that they ought to be thinking of? I know I'm sure you've had some conversations on the floor at Shields, people talking about this. They're going on their first big fishing trip. They talk about, you know, the gear that they have, but they're probably missing out on something just because of their own lack of experience. What could you give us on along those lines?
I think if you're going to a destination fishing trip, I'll give you a couple good answers to this. First and foremost, I think thing that gets lost in people is, one, good clothing. I don't care what brand you run, whether it's Ice Armor, Eskimo, Striker, I don't care what. Make sure it's good stuff. Both in that it's warm enough for you, and I say that specifically because everyone's different. One of my common questions, the first question I ask when people are looking for good ice fishing clothing is, well, are you warm-bodied or cold-bodied? You know, do you get cold easy or do you stay pretty warm easily? You know, do you overheat? Because I don't care where you are, what you're doing. If you're not comfortable, you're not going to enjoy it. Or I guess even more specifically, if let's say you go to Lake Winnipeg, and you're looking, you've never caught a 30 plus inch wall. You're looking for that one bite, right? Like you're going there with a goal in mind. Like I got 4 days at Lake Winnipeg. I've booked the best guide. He posts the biggest fish, best pictures. You know, I feel like this is my one shot to finally get that trophy. And you're out there and it's day one, the first 2 hours, and you know, you're calm in Winnipeg, you're running and gunning. You're probably going to fish outside more often than not. And your guy's got you set up in a good spot. You know, there's fish running below. You're sitting there fishing, but you're cold. You're kind of shivering. Your hands are cold. You know, you're just using the same old gloves that's been in your truck for 10 years. You didn't buy those, you know, extra tough, fully insulated, waterproof gloves that were sitting on the rack at Shields. You know, if you're cold or uncomfortable, you're thinking about being cold. You're thinking about that you're uncomfortable first and foremost. You're not thinking about fishing. So what's going to happen is you're maybe not paying as much attention. You might miss that bite, or you might not tune your cadence in to get that fish to bite, that once in a lifetime fish is finally slid underneath you. Don't cheap out on your clothing. And I guess it's not even, I don't know your track. It's not even about cheaping out. It's about finding the best gear that fits you. Because the flip side of that, let's say you're overheating, you bought something that's way too warm for you. Now you're sweating. Well, once you sweat, you're going to get wet. You're more likely to get even cold now. You're just uncomfortable. So finding the right clothing for you, I think, gets lost on a lot of people. Because you should always get to remember that first thing I said is, if you're not comfortable, fishing is not the first thing on your mind. As much as you might try to fight it or, you know, push it out of your mind, just in that aspect, you have to focus on ignoring that versus just thinking about fishing first and foremost. So I think if you're going to a destination, make sure you have good quality clothing. That's from not just the bibs and jacket wearing. I mean, I'm talking the gloves and the boots more specifically, because that's the first thing that always gets cold is your feet and your hands. You know, make sure you have good, warm, waterproof boots, good, warm, waterproof and windproof gloves as well, no matter where you go. That's first and foremost. And I think the other part of it too, where I think this matters more before you come see me in the store, is if you're going on a destination trip, whether you're going with a guide or you're doing a DIY trip, you know, doing your own thing, talk to people who fish that area, especially if you're going somewhere you've fished before, and listen to them. You know, if they tell you, you know, if you're going to Lake Winnipeg and they're telling you, giant spoons, you know, like 4, 5, 6 inch flutter spoons and rattle baits, nothing less than a half ounce. You know, they're eating big stuff right now. You know, I'm just paraphrasing here. I'm just giving an example. And then you come and then you show up with like crappie gear. Good luck, I guess. Yeah, that's probably where your guide's going to tell you. So, I mean, so I, I it's kind of interesting. You'll get people that, you know, they, their guy tells them to do this, then they'll come in, they'll say, yeah, he said this, but I'm not sure. I'm just going to go with what I always use, or I think this worked best. It's like, you just, you're spending all this money on a guide, or say you're not getting guided. You're spending all this money on lodging, gas, food to go to this extravagant place you've always dreamed about going. And someone gave you the blueprints, or at least maybe just the guidelines to steer you in the right direction for having success. And you just completely ignore them and you go the opposite way because either through ignorance or just you're that stubborn. I never really understood that, you know? So I guess that's another thing I'd say to people is if you're going somewhere you've never been before, truly listen to people who have been there before. They're not trying to, you know, get one over on you or prove their worth to you. They're trying more. 99% of people are truly trying to help you. They want you to catch fish too and have a good time. So, you know, again, I've circled back to listen to your guide or take the local advice to some degree, because it'll probably just save you a lot of, you know, decision making, or you can focus on, again, the things that really matter if the easy stuff is just given you in the form of a layup, you know. So listen to your guide. Have good clothing. I think the other part I'd say is you go into a destination is, you know, keep an open mind and just enjoy the experience, right? Because there's always going to be things you can't control. Fishing is still fishing at the end of the day. Even going to Lake Winnipeg, where it's the land of the giant greenbacks, right? You might not catch that giant you're hoping for. It's still fishing. But, you know, go into it with a good attitude and just take it for what it's worth. You can't control weather. That's another big part of it, especially a lot of these destination trips. I know a lot of people plan, you know, months in advance, right? You don't know what the weather is going to be in early March when you book your trip early December. You know, I don't know of a weather model that's good enough that far ahead. I mean, even if there was, I wouldn't trust it. I mean, my weatherman's wrong about the weather tomorrow. Yeah. You know, so again, if you're going on a destination trip somewhere you've never been or the trip of a lifetime, make sure you're prepared with clothing. Make sure you take the advice that's given to you through experience, through people who have that experience, and then go into it with an open mind and just have fun and soak it all in. Because you never know if you might not make it back there again, or you might realize that, oh, I got to get back here multiple times now. I think Winnipeg's a good example of that for me. You know, I didn't go for years when people were telling me to, just because I didn't really have the means. I didn't know how to get up there. Fortunately, finally, I had a buddy who had the means to get up there and had some experience. He got me up there. Now I try to go 3, 4, 5 as many times a year as I can, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just through that. I had never been there before. I had someone who was willing to get me up there, but then also they told me exactly what I needed as far as clothing, gear. And I listened to a T. And when I got there, I realized they were pretty on the money. You know, a lot of my walleye gear I used to use around here, kind of while still getting into it, was a lot of light, medium, light, a lot of finesse stuff, right? Well, up Lake Winnipeg, we just keep using that as the example. You know, it's a whole other ball game. Those fish are a lot bigger. Even the smaller ones fight a lot harder. They're using a lot bigger lures. So with you pair all that together, you need to go up there with medium as your lightest act. Power rod. I mean, more often than not, I'm using medium, heavy, and heavy gear. You know, a lot of gear that guys back here would consider pipe gear. You know, if they see me fishing with that, they're like, oh, you must be fishing for one bite. Well, around here I am up there. You know, I need this gear just to handle a 5-pound 24-incher up there. They just seem like a different breed of fish. You know?
Oh yeah, man. Phenomenal advice. You know, every once in a while you just run into people on the street and you just kind of get that vibe from them that maybe it's just an ego thing where people are just, maybe they believe they're proficient enough of an angler wherever they're from, you know, on their home body of water that, like, you know, they don't take advice from other people. They give it because they're just that good. But then you go on a destination trip and if you're going somewhere for the first time, you got to be more open than that. You know, like you just, I think that that's true. And if people reflect or look in the mirror a little bit more, it's true that some people just, you know, it's a pride deal where they're going somewhere. They want to test their mettle. They don't want information. They don't want nothing from nobody. You know, like you say, it's on their home body of water. They're the go-to individual. They're not somebody that asks a lot of questions. That's, you know, to be a dangerous angler, like year round, every day, anytime you ever go out, people that are at the top, are willing to take information from anybody. You might get the best piece of advice or, you know, information from, you know, your buddy that maybe doesn't fish a whole lot around home, not nearly as much as you do, but they do destination trips more than you. They might go, they might have, you know, 7-day trips on an annual basis for a decade going somewhere. And you finally get to go there for the first time. You might fish more than them day to day, week to week, month to month at home. And you might decide that, you know, you fish more than them. You've got more, you know, more skill and experience. That's not somebody you're going to take advice from, but that's exactly who you'd want advice from. Like what's been going on when you go over there? You know, so you kind of got to have that pride ego thing. You got to have a good, a grip on that. And anglers don't always, right? It's like, you know, there's plenty of ego going on in the fishing world. So yeah, probably never going to land on the right people there, but a solid point to make if people are really reflecting on themselves, you know, that we all probably leave a little bit on the table as far as, you know, bringing in good information from the right sources. But anyways, well, Jaden, we're good on time here. I really appreciate the conversation. All the topics that you've touched on is all good stuff. The retail updates and just some of your personal preferences, you know, talking about some stuff that's new and cool on the market. Talking about some of the fishing that you've been doing. The Winnipeg updates, I think, are awesome. Just fun to talk fishing with you. So it's all good stuff, man. Unless there's something else that's really eating at you that you want to throw out there. I don't know when we're going to talk next. So anything's on the table in that way. But if not, you know, let people know how they can find you if they want to reach out with questions or anything like that.
No, I appreciate it, brother. I really don't got much else to speak on. I haven't really found any of those home run bites or had those home run days on yet, so I don't really feel the need to talk about myself anymore than we already have. But yeah, guys, they can always reach me at the Fargo Shields Fargo Shields Star location. I'm there usually 5 days, 45 hours a week. If I'm not there, chances are I'm out fishing. People can always reach out to me just on my Facebook, just Jaden Thomas, and then my Instagram, Jaden Thomas Fishing. I'm always willing to answer questions. I don't always reply back super fast. Not that I'm ignoring you. Just I do got a lot going on with between work and fishing, and I try not to be that guy that's on my phone when I'm either on the ice or on the water. So I try to get back to people when I'm back at shore or have a little bit of downtime. So if you reach out, I don't respond to you right away. Promise you, I'm not ignoring you. Just need to find the right time to get back. But always willing to answer questions or even just talk fishing in general.
Right on, man.